You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Welcome to the show. I'm Stuart Goldsmith, and this is something of a first because Nigel Ng is returning to the show immediately, or almost immediately, after this year has seen him go from 20,000 YouTube subscribers to 2.8 million YouTube subscribers. Now, you and I know that I don't tend to investigate people's analytics too much. I don't tend to be... I try not to be too impressed with big numbers. But come on, right? And it was such an exciting time to talk to Nigel just before this all happened. So if you haven't already heard the episode from just a few months ago, or from maybe April 2020, in which Nigel talked about laying the groundwork and hoping it was all going to go off, go and listen to that one. You can listen to them after this or in whichever order you like. But here is Nigel reflecting on the craziness of the last year. We're going to talk about what he's learned from winning the YouTube lottery. We'll talk about how he prepared the field for the explosive growth he's enjoyed, how much of it was luck, how he manages collaboration, what new challenges he's anticipating, and whether his success would be repeatable in an alternate universe. Oh, it's good gear. You can look back a few months in the archive to hear Nigel's first appearance, as I said, and you can join the Insiders Club at comedianscomedian.com/insiders to hear the 20 minutes of extras from that episode, as well as the extras from every episode that has them from the last 350-something shows, plus the exclusive 60-minute Zoom Q&A that Insiders recently enjoyed with James Acaster. Find Uncle Roger and Nigel's own stand-up at Mr. Nigel Ng on every platform and at youtube.com/Mr. Nigel Ng. Without any further ado, let's hear how it all went right. Here's Nigel. Welcome back to the podcast, Nigel Ng, returning after the smallest possible gap that anyone has returned. Fill us in on why that is and what's happened this year when you won the pandemic.
When I won... I wouldn't phrase it like that, but basically I have gotten extremely, extremely lucky with this character I created called Uncle Roger, who is a middle-aged Malaysian man. He blew up on YouTube from reviewing other people's egg fried rice cooking videos.
Yes. So when we spoke, and I don't remember, it was earlier, like, I don't know, it was maybe April or something. It was very soon after that. When did it spike? When was the Hersha Patel video?
Yeah.
The reaction to Hersha Patel.
Hersha Patel video I uploaded early July and it spiked late July.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And by spiked, you went from what to what? How many subscribers on YouTube did you have when we first spoke?
Well,
like 20,000?
Let's put it this way. My goal for subscribers this year on YouTube was 10,000. That was my goal.
Yeah. And now you have 2.5 million?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just one of those work a day, Commodore Garden.
It's a bit, I overshot my goal by a little bit, I think.
You know? Very good.
When I say spiked, I meant like, you know, I have had stuff go viral on Instagram before, you know, like little clips go viral on Instagram or TikTok, but I've never seen anything like that. It went viral on everywhere. It was on Twitter, on Instagram, Facebook, Reddit, 9gag, Lad Bible, everywhere.
I sent you a message to go, look at this, you're on Imgur front page. Like, I don't really read Reddit. I look at Imgur. I don't know if I'm pronounced that correctly, imgur.com. Mm-hmm. And I was like, holy shit, Nigel. And I text you a message. And then as I sent the message, I thought, I'll just check he probably knows. And so I kind of looked at the video on YouTube and went, oh, he knows, he knows.
Yeah, it's been insane. And I've been on so many newspapers, started having articles about me. I was in Variety, which is insane. That big yes. Hollywood newspaper. There's a whole article about Uncle Roger. Yeah, it's crazy. I was on SBS, Seoul Broadcasting Service. They had a whole 10-minute video based on, oh, is this how Westerners cook rice? And then they had my clip in there, and they interviewed like famous chefs, and they had like famous chefs watching my video. It's been all very surreal and crazy.
And it feels, certainly from the outside, it feels like this isn't just a kind of a weird viral spike. This is like you are, if not uniquely, you are unusually well placed to capitalize on this and turn this, like a lot of people. I was saying to someone in the queue for my, I was talking to a fellow parent as I dropped my kid off at school this morning, talking about this interview and sort of explaining that often when people go viral, it's out of their control. Like the viralness is out of their control. And then you almost see them scrabble to go, how can I sustain this? How can I maintain it? In your case, what we talked about on the podcast in April or whenever it was, you were completely placed for success to happen. You were ready for it to happen, and you were very deliberately making decisions based on, and not just making decisions, but like you were doing research. We talked about your background in data science and about how you were paying close attention to every aspect of, you know, the rate of likes, the rate of subscribers, how successful those things were. So although you mentioned being lucky at the top, and we'll come back to the idea of luck, because I think there is obviously luck involved, but you had perfectly prepared the ground through which to be lucky. So if someone said to me, how can I do what Nigel's doing? The answer isn't you can't, but the answer would have to be you would have to be as obsessed with the science and the research behind what makes that happen, and then get lucky. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I think that's super fair. When you say I was ready, yes, in the sense that, yes, I knew how to edit, I know how to film, I know how to make things look and sound good, what camera to use, so I had all that knowledge. I know what to do, and oh, this hits hard. How do I follow up? How do I make sure people watch this video and subscribe instead of just watch this video, share it, and forget about me? So yes. I had that knowledge in mind, and I put them into practice, and it's working out well so far. People still know who Uncle Roger is 4 months into Uncle Roger blowing up, so I'm pretty happy with that. Yeah, let's keep this going.
Yeah, and what's so exciting for me is like we'd spoken about kind of along the way, we've had a couple of text messages, conversations about, you know, I love strategizing, and I don't have the kind of explosive growth through which I can experiment in the way that you can. What I love is I've loved watching you experiment with the different things that Uncle Roger has done. You know, you haven't, no part of this process has seemed to me to be you resting on your laurels. It's almost like you're waking up every day going, this is day one. What am I going to do today? How can I continue this growth, but how can I continue the way I've been doing it, which is to constantly experiment and take risks and try things. And I mean, I'm also, I should say at this point, for people who haven't seen this, which will be a vanishingly small percentage of the people, because you are sufficiently viral that I could say to a friend in the pub, if they were still a thing, that I could say, oh, he's this guy who reviews rice. And they're like, oh, the guy with the orange polo shirt. Yeah, that guy. You know, people have seen you. What we're leaving aside for the moment is that it is very funny. Like, it's very funny, and the editing is quick, and you are making lots of offers for things to be funny. So it's not just the character, it's not just the catchphrases or the costume, it's not just the tone, it's not just the, you know, the technique of editing, which particularly in the Hersha Patel video, it's almost like you've cut out all the pauses for breath so that everything is punchline, 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 or observation, observation, observation. So it's all very funny, and we'll get back to that. But just to talk about the... Where should we start? What's most surprised you about the last 6 months? About getting into the position that you are now, where I imagine you have a completely different view of your career and your possibilities.
What's most surprising? Honestly, it's how much people liked Uncle Roger. You know, I would be happy with that video getting 50,000 views. You know, oh, yeah. That's great. That's great, but I'm surprised at how much it spoke to people, that initial one where I just bitched about how, you know, maybe I'm surprised at how this topic is such a, to me, was such a niche thing. Oh, British people fuck up rice all the time. It's a joke that I have done in my stand-up before, you know, so I know it works here. But it's crazy how it resonated with Asians from everywhere. And non-Asians too, but a lot of Asian people from the Western world, from Philippines, Thailand, Indonesia. Everybody is like, holy shit, do white people do this all the time? And then it was just that makes I was surprised at how much this resonated with people.
It's like, yeah, it's almost, not to suggest it's one joke, but the foundational premise, if you like, is a really good observation that resonates with people all over the world.
Yeah.
British people fuck up rice, or Western people fuck up rice.
Yeah, and Western people enjoy it too, because they're like, oh yeah, we do that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm very surprised by that. And you know, you can never know whether or not a premise is going to resonate this hard, you know, all this stuff. I got sent that video by a fan of the podcast.
I was going to ask someone, you intro'd the video by going, a fan sent me this. Yeah. I'm like, have you sent that fan a hamper?
I've sent her a t-shirt of my merch. So.
Oh, yeah. Big of you.
So a fan sent that video over, and I was at that point, I already made a few small Uncle Roger videos on my TikTok, my Instagram, 40-second clips, you know, just experimenting with the character, right? And then at that point, I was like, okay, I think I'm ready to tackle a longer form YouTube video. And that's another thing. I was comfortable doing the short form stuff and the long form stuff already at that point. So I was like, when this video came along, I was like, okay, let's try to do this on Uncle Roger. Let's see how it goes. And then, yeah, I just did it and posted it.
So one of the wonderful things about the Hersha Patel video is that you laid into her and then have very deftly managed the situation of your, like, thousands of your brand new fans giving her a load of shit. Like, and you have managed to, in a way that I suppose is, it gives me real hope in the internet and in people, because almost every internet commentator who reviews something and slams it, you feel that there's no aftercare. Whereas you have kind of brought Hersha on board, recorded videos with her, and now she's kind of in the slipstream of Uncle Roger and is... I mean, I saw she's reacting to your video, reacting to Jamie Oliver. It's like
Inception.
But it works. You know, it's the thing that it isn't is kind of the pointless pre-packaging and reformatting. Sorry, repackaging and reformatting of content. It sort of has a value in itself. As someone who, I mean, I was never into reaction videos until I saw those two twins reacting to Phil Collins in the Air Tonight. Have you seen that one? Like, they've never heard it before, and they hear it, and the drums come in, and they both go, they're like teenagers, they both go, whoa, and you can see their minds being blown. And I suddenly went,
I get it now.
I get why people, like, those reaction things, that works for me as a format.
Yeah, I think, well, reaction videos as a format, I think it gets a bad rep on YouTube, because a lot of them are very low effort. It's just a really, usually a very pretty lady, you know, and then just watching an anime, and then just, just laughing at points. So that's what people think, but... You know, when we do reaction videos, if we do it as a comic and then we do it properly, we try to write jokes for it, it can be really good, you know? So I think as a format, it's worth exploring if you want to make content, I think.
It's not a million miles away from when a kind of a headliner, I've seen in my kind of gigging experience, maybe a headliner who's got a load of gear, but they're a bit bored of their gear, and they'll go on stage at some provincial gig and they'll grab a copy of the local newspaper and stand there riffing on the stories in the local newspaper and how shit the town must be. I think that's like an early proto-reaction video, isn't it? It's like, here's new information coming in. I'm using my comedy intellect to explore it and unpack it and take the piss out of it. So I suppose it can be done well or badly.
Yeah. You can have open micer reaction video makers and also, you know, headliner level reaction
video. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So given that that very first video, which is now on, I think, 18 million views.
Yeah, about that, yeah.
So that one is now, you can't change that. That's set in stone now. You could take it down, but you can't edit it once it's up.
Nope.
And it's been seen by everyone. Is there anything that you would change about that video if you could?
I'll make it funnier, write more jokes in it. And if I knew... So I've developed the character since then, right? So if I knew...
Yes, yeah.
How I've developed a character now, I would have gone back and, you know, made some changes. You know, it probably would have my accent's gotten a little bit more natural. My accent for the character has gotten a bit more natural. I've had a few more jokes now because I now when I write prepare for a video, I sit down with a comedian friend of mine, you know, different comics, and we try to like punch it up, make it as funny as we can. Okay. But in that case, it was just me. Yeah, I'll come up with a few jokes here and there. That's enough. That's enough.
this will do.
Yeah, it was very this will do. And then I would have made it a little bit longer, you know, because I can see analytics wise, people, there's an appetite for longer videos on my channel as well. But also, I'm thinking maybe all this knowledge, putting it back there wouldn't work. You know, maybe that rawness, that unpolishedness, I didn't have like the best equipment. I had a light, but it was like a shitty light. In my later videos, the light is better. You can tell the quality is a little bit better. Mm. But maybe that shittiness and the shitty hair, because it was locked down and I couldn't cut it, you know, maybe all that contributed to this package. And then people like seeing the evolution of this character. So going back, if I changed it to what I know now, maybe it wouldn't have worked as well. You know?
Yes.
Who knows?
There is certainly, whatever that quality is of kind of potentially viralness, I think definitely rawness is part of it.
Yeah, the rawness, the audio wasn't great. I was clipping in a lot of parts because I was using a shitty mic and I didn't know how to tweak the settings yet. But maybe that all contributed to it. You know, you're right. So I don't know what I would change it to what I know now, but I don't know if it would have worked as well.
Yes. Yeah. But I did notice at the end of that video, there's a link to your Patreon. There's a link to, you know what I mean? It was all set up. We were talking about preparing the ground for success. It wasn't just going to disappear. I would imagine we'd be having a very different conversation if now you were thinking, oh yeah, at the end of it, I would have said who I am and where they could find more. And you know what I mean? All those things. You'd already taken care of all of that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's I think those are the basics, right? Gonna know, and subscribe, you know.
Slap that like button like you'd slap a bag of rice.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So, that's another thing. I need to come up with new lines for that. That's a kind of little flourishes. Smack that like button like, you know, how your parents smack you when you fail your test, how your parents smack the remote when it doesn't work. You know, I need to come up with more lines on that. So that's
sure,
a fun thing to do,
sure,
too.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
And so talk to me about the development of the character. Like, the things I know about Uncle Roger are that he always wears an orange polo shirt. Uh-huh. He has a relationship with Auntie Helen who left him and he's bitter. He has a phone in a case. What I love about these things, they're such simple. Like, you could buy the costume, and we'll get onto the costumes, the Halloween stuff later. Yeah, great idea. Yeah. But what I like about it is that it has a kind of archetypal nature. I think that's what you've struck on. The fact that he's an uncle rather than just some guy called Roger, it sort of makes sense. It feels from the outside like you have stumbled upon a thing which is already there. Do you know what I mean? The statue was inside the marble.
Yeah, that is, I mean, it's every middle-aged Asian uncle. We call everybody older than us uncles or aunties back in Asia.
Sure. Right?
Yeah. So when I did my research for this, it was my dad. I told my friends to send me a picture of your dad's, and I wanted to see what outfit to wear. Right. And
did polo, you really do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
bright
that's
colored
so
polo.
Research. You didn't just have.
Yeah, it was a very common choice. Bright colored polo. Sometimes it was stripy ones, but stripes don't work well on camera. You know. So I just went with a garish orange polo.
That is such a satisfying surprise that you being you did research on, like, rather than just going, I'm going to play an uncle character, I'll make some decisions. You went, I'm going to field test what will be the most familiar version of it. And as a result, came up with something incredibly familiar.
Yeah, I can't wait till I film something outside in the winter because I have an orange down jacket ready to go. That's my other research. I was asking, what does your dad wear in the cold weather? Because in Malaysia, we don't have winter, so I don't know anything about that. But I asked my other Western Asian friends, and they're like, yeah, puffy down jacket that's a lot of pockets, loose. So I have that ready to go, too. Okay. Yeah, and then all the little details. My dad has a belt phone case, you know, and the way I sit, leg on the chair, I used to sit like that in Malaysia. And if you go to a coffee shop in Malaysia, the non-Western, non-touristy areas, you will see this uncle sitting with his leg on the chair, chatting to other uncles, smoking, maybe wearing a vest. Sometimes they don't wear polo shirts, they wear a vest because in Malaysia it's warmer. So you will see that person. And I think that's a big reason too why people gravitated so much to it, because they're like, oh, that's my dad. And even my dad was like, my dad is telling other people that I got the idea from him, which is, I mean, yeah, but Asian parents love to take credit for everything you do, right?
So What was that made me think of something, which is that you came up with, in that first video that went mega viral, you came up with certain things which now have become sort of solidified catchphrases, the hi-ya,
yeah,
you know, the leg on table. And it's almost like every element of it that was set up in there, you have maximized. You've squeezed every, well, not squeezed, I don't sound that negative, but you know what I mean? You've found the maximum funny in all of those elements. So which things have you introduced since then, and which things that you've introduced since then have worked and you've gone, I'll keep that in?
So the stuff that's worked, I have hi-ya, which is, again, something I said growing up, you know, that's how we express like disappointment, you know, when things don't go your way. It's very versatile. And I introduced the opposite of that, fuyo, which is like, you know, impressed. So that, that has taken on too. So everybody, I get tagged in a lot of Insta stories, you know, people voting, is it hi-ya or is it fuyo? So I kind of use that. It's kind of become like, I'll review your thing. Is it going to be hi-ya? Is it going to be fuyo? Let's see.
Sure.
The repetition.
And thereby you've kind of gamified them reacting to it in a way that benefits you.
Yeah, yeah. And the way I repeat myself, again, it's a very Malaysian way of speaking. We repeat ourselves a lot, certain phrases to emphasize. So like the phrase, what you think, you know, it's...
Yeah, okay.
I use that a lot too. What else? There's sometimes I break character and then I say, oh, sorry, children. And then people seem to really like my voice. For some reason, I think because when I speak in that accent, it's very like harsh and it's this tone, very harsh, a bit high pitch, a bit like just robotic and like accent-y, you know. But then when I say, oh, sorry, children, and you know, it's a lower volume and it sounds a little more attractive, I guess. But people seem to like that.
They like it when you drop down into that gear.
Yeah. They like it when I break character. When I say something that's dirty, right, and I laugh, and then I say, oh, sorry, children. So I had two videos where I said, sorry, children, now, and people always comment on that. But yeah, I think it happens. All these things, a lot of these things are accidental. You know, the sorry, children, the first time I said it, it was just, oh, I think it's funny, let's put it in there. And then I was like, whoa, people seem to really like it. They want me to do ASMR now based on that sorry, children phrase. So let's do it again, you know?
Yeah. So this is Nigel, no extras from this episode, but 20 minutes worth from his initial episode earlier this year, available to you at comedianscomedian.com/insiders. What a joy. Do I say that often enough that it's become a catchphrase now? But you can just hear me smiling through all of this. What an exciting thing to see someone go so stratospherically hyper-viral in the space of 6 months, really, to recognize as well. And I mean, the frustrating thing, as we will get on to talking about, the frustrating thing to the artist who is not yet explosively viral, is recognizing the extent to which the way Nigel's mind works, the way he obsesses, the way he enjoys following all of the analytics meticulously, learning, testing, experimenting, and getting to grips with how to make it work. And all of that, that kind of analytical and procedural approach being housed in the same brain as someone who is very, very funny. So not only is he in this incredible position where he's got the enormous YouTube following, but also has the comedy chops to do like a genuinely worthwhile and funny live show once they all come to it. But also he's got the kind of the YouTube success, the data-driven science behind it and that kind of brain, and is very, very funny, knows how to write and perform a joke very, very well. And I just couldn't be more pleased for him. Not least because I have no personal interest in reviewing rice. So there's like, it's, I'm sometimes jealous. I don't know if you can ever hear it in my voice. I'm sometimes jealous of guests that we have on the podcast because of their enormous skill or their enormous reach or their enormous whatever it is, you know. But with Nigel, I can safely say I don't wish to spend my own life making YouTube videos, and I'm in the very privileged position of being able to be completely thrilled for him with no emotional drawbacks to my own sense of self. What a happy place. Let's hear more from Nigel.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Because you're so intentional about creating work sort of reflectively based on what they're enjoying, that's a big part of it. You know, like, it's an incredibly contemporary internet-y thing. In the old days, the artist would make a thing and then put it out there and see if people liked it. And then gradually we've changed the model now to put a thing out there, see which bits of it people like, and do them more. Which is just, you know, it's a kind of a clowning exercise writ large, except your audience is millions rather than 10 people in a room. You know, you go towards what they're enjoying, what they're finding funny. So do you... have you tried anything that they've reacted to and thought, we like this, and you've thought, I don't really... that doesn't sit with the character? Have you tried before? I've overcomplicated the question. Have you tried any developments that then haven't gone off and you've gone, oh, no one noticed that, I won't bother?
I think I have. I can't think of any right now, but I think there are... It's not like I'm actively trying certain things. Like, okay, Fuyo took off. So that was something, yeah, I actively tried because I want to have like the opposite of Haya. But the rest of the stuff, it wasn't something I actively tried and then actively thought, okay, let's keep an eye on the comments. Let's see if people notice this. It's more like I put something out there and then, oh, they noticed this. Let's do that more. Yeah.
Sure. So one of those things, you do that kind of bubble effect on Uncle Roger's head. Is that whenever he talks about white people?
It eventually became that because at first I just used the bubble effect to as a YouTube effect to keep people's interest. But then I realized, I only use this when I talk about, so people know I'm being, you know, ironic or sarcastic or joking, you know. So yes, eventually I stumbled onto that, really. Yeah.
Okay. What was I? Sorry, I had another question on. Before we move on, I had another question on the. Like, so the depth of the character. So when did Auntie Helen turn up?
So I think it's based on my life too, you know.
I was going to say, knowing you, I'm aware that there's an element of truth in that, yeah.
Yeah, there's an element of truth, but, you know, me and my ex, we are friends now, and she's a nice person. But it's funnier to have this character, you know. Divorce jokes are very, very common in stand-up, right? And we all laughing at divorce people because there's just something funny about that. It becomes like a mechanism for jokes. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I have, I think on my TikTok, early TikTok clips, I talk about why I use a belt phone case. You know, I say, oh, many people put their put their phones in their pockets. But I'm like, no, pockets are not for the phone. Pockets are for receipts, because that's another observation. Mm-hmm. A lot of Asian parents love stuffing receipts down. And I just pretended to take all the receipts out. Then took a look at one. I said, oh, this receipt's from 2014. This receipt lasted longer than my marriage. So I think that's it's a little device that allows me to hang a lot of jokes on. So I just kept and it paints a nice backstory too, you know.
So I feel like you have been kind of brainstorming, what can you do? What can you do with this? When it first spiked and you went, whoa, hold on, there's a lot of possibilities here. So what were the sorts of things that you tried that have been particularly successful? And what is there still left on your list of, I've thought about doing this and I haven't quite got round to it, or I don't know if it would work? Or are there ideas that you've had that you've thought, it's a good idea, but it's not right for Uncle Roger?
Honestly, it's YouTube. So if there's an idea, I'll do it. You know, because I have to put out a video every week. So if there's an idea, even though I don't think it's that strong an idea, I'll still do it. I'll do it the best I can. But I know in my head, it's like, okay, they probably won't hit as hard. But that's okay, because a video every week, that's a challenge I've set for myself. So I think I do a lot of different things on there. The things that hit the hardest right now are like my egg fried rice reaction videos. But I know if I keep doing that, people will get sick of it. I will get sick of it. So I've tried to mix it up with some, I call them location shoots. So Uncle Roger works at a food truck. Uncle Roger works at a restaurant. So this Saturday, we're filming this Wednesday. What day is today? 11th November, Wednesday. And this Saturday, I want to film Uncle Roger works at a bubble tea shop. I'm currently in Stockholm. That's why I escaped London for lockdown. Part of it was to film that video. So I love these.
Where are you currently, did you say?
Stockholm, Sweden.
Stockholm. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So I'm going to film Uncle Roger works at Bubble Tea Shop. And I really like these because it showcases a different, there's a live element to it, you know? So my comedic chops come in handy. And it's not something every YouTuber can do.
This is it. So let's talk about this, because you are in such an exciting position now, because there are YouTubers out there with millions and millions of followers, but they don't have the skills that you have from X years of working on the circuit and performing in front of an audience. The first person I thought of was Chris Fleming. I don't know if you know Chris Fleming. He was on the podcast a couple of years ago. He's he did a show called Show Pony. He does these kind of sitcoms about this female character basically based on his mother. And he was in a position where he was a gigging comic and he kind of pressed pause on that because he was frustrated with it, then became massive on YouTube, and now is in this wonderful position whereby he has a huge audience who will turn up to a live show. And when they do turn up, he is an incredibly satisfying and skilled live performer, which presumably a lot of YouTubers would like to have, but they, you know, how can they learn it now? Because their audience will laugh when they say anything.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a good skill to have, man. Being able to do comedy.
I don't disagree.
It's so transferable. That's the thing, you know, no matter what type of video I make, those skills will come in handy. I can tell the rhythm of a joke. I can, even if it's not that funny, I can find ways to kind of make it sound funny-ish.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The illusion of funny, right? Or, you know, and you can also, I can also try to write decent jokes for it, you know,
you can riff with a second person who, and they don't have to be funny. So when you're around Hersha's house and you've kind of gathered her into the fold and then gone around her house and done a kind of peacemaking video, I imagine partly to stop people attacking her on your behalf and partly because it makes sense to kind of prolong that collaboration, but you're able to riff with her and she doesn't need to be funny. You have the skills to make loads of offers and improvise stuff around the place. So when you approach a bubble tea place in Stockholm, are you able to knock on their door and say, you might know me from the internet, I'd like to shoot a thing, and they go, oh my God, it's you?
Yeah, that's kind of exactly what happened. I went there and said, hey, I have a YouTube channel. But before I said anything, they're like, oh, you're that guy. And then it became really easy to get, you know, permission from the boss to film. So that was nice.
Okay, so let's talk about what you anticipate the ramifications are for your parallel career as a comic, because you are very careful, or very, not careful, but you're very deliberate about your YouTube channel being, okay, Nigel Ng is my nephew and he's a comedian and he, you know, I Uncle Roger have a relationship with him, but here's loads of Uncle Roger stuff and here's a clip of Nigel. And I remember you telling me just when it was first spiking that what happened was that everybody, you went viral, everyone visited your YouTube channel and discovered a load of very nicely packaged professional stand-up content, binge-watched it, and then it kind of kicked you into the YouTube algorithm, which then kind of catapulted you even further, like one of those, you know, those dog owners have those things that pick up a tennis ball and just whang it. Do you know what I mean? It was like a trebuchet sort of effect. So you're very deliberate about saying, Uncle Roger is this, I, Nigel, am a stand-up and I have got things to say as a stand-up. What do you assume at the moment your future is as a stand-up?
I think people still come to watch me do stand up. That's always the goal, right? To sell tickets. But to use Uncle Roger to sell tickets, I think the only thing I need to be concerned about is the conversion rate. You know, just because someone likes Uncle Roger doesn't mean they'll like me as Nigel, right? So I'm working the best I can to make sure they know that Uncle Roger is a character I created. You know, there's a reason why the YouTube channel is still called Mr. Nigel Ng instead of Uncle Roger. There's a reason why in the YouTube description, I always say Uncle Roger is a character of Malaysian comedian Nigel Ng. And sometimes I break character in my most recent, the Halloween costume video, in the bloopers, I do a segment as myself talking to them. So I'm gradually bleeding it in that I'm It's
Dwayne The Rock Johnson, right? Yeah. It's like The Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Dwayne Johnson. That's what you've got to manage. So are you getting kind of help with that element of it? Or is that all you and you just using your kind of the production of that, the kind of the transition, if you like? Is that all just based on you thinking this will probably work? Or are you kind of talking to other YouTubers who've managed to achieve the same thing, or management, or what is it? Because it seems like you're in that position where you have absolute control of the means of production. You write it, you edit it, you produce it. It's all about you. What role does anyone else have in it? Are you running it past anyone? Are you being advised by anyone? Or are you all just taking your best shot and trying it?
I think, yeah, management has said something about, you know, make sure they know it's still you. And they tell me that, yeah, make sure they know it's still me. But how to do it, it's all up to me. Which is, you know, the thing, my favorite part about YouTube, really. You figure it out yourself. There's nobody, yep. Oh, you don't have to write a treatment for anything. Oh, my God. Oh, comics will know this, man. The treatment writing, my God. Yeah, it's, you write something, I'm going to write something about the thing I want to make. But YouTube lets you to just make the thing. I call up a videographer and just make it. So it works for me. I like just doing stuff. But everything is, I'm trying to figure out with a healthy dose of common sense and just strategizing. Ultimately, there's not really any other YouTubers who's in my position, because most of them aren't stand-ups to begin with. Most of them don't really care about selling tickets in their own name, right? Most of them, they're happy to just do meet and greets as the character. Mm-hmm. And most of them don't even do characters. They're like vloggers, or they do their own thing as themselves or as a group of people. So I'm kind of in this unique position. I'm hoping it pays off, you know, and it seems like it will, because when people follow my Instagram, my Facebook, I sometimes post like a podcast clip and people consume it, people watch it, or a stand-up clip, or my Insta stories show that I am my own person. So I think people aren't idiots, and over time they'll see that, oh yeah, Nigel Ng is the creator of Uncle Roger, he's doing a show, let's go watch him. That being said, my first tour, I want to try to do something. I'll see if I can figure this out, but hopefully Uncle Roger can open for me. He'll do 20 minutes and then break, and then I'll come up and do 50. So they get best of both worlds. They get to see Uncle Roger, and then they leave saying, oh, Nigel Ng's pretty funny too. So hopefully that's the goal.
Mm-hmm. Is the fear that you will have to open for Uncle Roger?
Oh yeah, there's a little bit of that, but I don't think I'll ever let that happen, to be honest.
But that's it. I think of Steve Coogan, who called one of his tours years ago, Steve Coogan presents Alan Partridge and other less successful characters. Do you know what I mean? Because he knew we were there for Partridge, right?
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, I guess that's somewhere on your mind. You know, it's unlikely. Is it unlikely that you as Nigel Ng will do some stand-up that eclipses that initial 18 million mega viral video? Or will that always be, like, if you die in a plane crash, is it Uncle Roger dies? Or is it Nigel Ng, creator of Uncle Roger?
Honestly, that if I die in a plane crash, I don't really care how they report it.
Yeah,
to be honest. But I don't really mind, you know, when I got punched, and I think it was a hate crime, and that got covered by a lot of news articles, and a lot of articles, the headline was like, Uncle Roger punched in hate crime. And I get that, because that will get people to click. I get that. And it doesn't really bother me when people come up to me and they say, oh, are you Uncle Roger? Some of them will say, oh, are you Nigel Ng? That's okay. But they come up to me and say, are you Uncle Roger? I still don't really mind, because it's still my creation. And if one day I realize, oh, I don't sell as many tickets as Nigel Ng compared to as Uncle Roger, then, you know, I can live with that. I'll play smaller venues as myself. If I want to retire the character, if I'm sick of it, then yeah, sure, I'll just play smaller venues, no problem.
To come back to this idea, when I said management, that's one question. My notion is that you, being the sort of science-driven person that you are, you will have... I wonder if you have done like case studies of other breakaway successful YouTubers to work out what the possibilities are. Like if we were to have a sort of strategic chat, I'd be kind of going, right, you've got to look at the top 100 YouTubers and work out not just what it is that they've done, but work out what the possibilities are. You know what I mean? And part of this conversation might branch into what sponsorships you decide to accept. You know, but again, I mean, that's a whole other, we'll have that conversation in a minute. But like, are you looking at other YouTubers and going, okay, so that's possible. Oh, wow. So that's possible. In the same way that if I won £10 million on the lottery, I wouldn't tell anyone until I'd researched how to have that kind of money and stay happy.
Oh, well, yes, it's not that formalized, as in I don't just sit down, okay, let's buy a whiteboard and put some post-its on every single famous
you
YouTuber.
Seem like a whiteboard guy. No, I would have guessed a whiteboard.
It's so inefficient. You have to buy a whiteboard and you have to draw it, you know, like just do it in your head, you know. Yeah. I follow a lot of YouTubers because it's my industry now, you know, and I follow them on Twitter, Instagram. I see what they do and I pick up ideas. I steal content ideas from them because all YouTubers, they all end up reviewing memes, you know, so which is what I did for one video. So I look at the YouTubers I like. The YouTubers are super big. You know, I don't know how familiar you are, but like PewDiePie, Mr. Beast, KSI, Davey 504, Two Set Violin, people in my niche, the comedy YouTuber type people. And I just kind of see what they do and learn from them, yeah. But it's not as formalized as let's come up with a case study. Let's write two paragraphs on this.
Sure. But do you feel that you're now kind of an open micer amongst, like, that's one mentality. One way you could go, hey, I've got millions of YouTube subscribers. Another mentality is to kind of go, if it is day one and up there is a billion YouTube subscribers or a billion views or something like that, then from that perspective, you're like, oh, I've only been really doing this for a year or two and now I'm the new kid. And I, like, does that scare you? Does it thrill you? Does it kind of feel like, God, it's a mountain to climb? Are you relishing it?
Yeah, I like it. It's rising to the challenge for me. It's coming up with a schedule and sticking to it. That's the challenge that, you know, it brings me a lot of joy every time I upload something. It's just, oh, yes, did it again. You know, because I see these big YouTubers, you know, Logan Paul, all the other people. It's like, fucking hell, how did they make 3-4 videos a week? I'm really struggling even to make one a week. And yeah, it's a huge journey to see that. I'm sure they have like a whole backlog of videos ready to go. If they died tomorrow, I'm sure they have a backlog. I'm like, I have zero backlog. I'm just, today's Wednesday. I haven't even shot the video for Sunday yet. So. So there's a lot to learn.
Is that because once they're monolithic like that, they're so rich that they can employ a 24/7 group of, I mean, presumably, because it could just build and build and build. Like, I don't want to make assumptions about your earnings, but one would think that once it catches fire and you're starting, once you've got over a million subscribers, it's possible to kind of go, oh, I could employ a business manager who could help me employ round-the-clock videographers, lighting guys, what have you, so that your role is simply to have the ideas and then perform, and you can just press a button in much the same way as I imagine Beyonce can. Yeah. She can just go, I'm going to do this, make that happen. I'll just do as much of it as I want.
See, the thing is, yes, I do employ people. I work with freelance video editors and videographers when needed, but ultimately it's still, YouTube is a creator-led process. You know, you don't have a production company to work with. So even though I have an editor, I'm still so hands-on. So the way I work with my editor, I send him the footage. I have a script, a rough script, and I still riff on stuff. I send him the rough script. He puts together the first pass. I take that Premiere project file and I do the second pass. So I'm actually still going in there and editing. And then I edit and I have some notes. Okay, do this, add this B-roll here. And then I send it back to him. He does a third pass. He sends it back to me. I do the fourth and final pass. That's how I've been working so far. Because sure, you can, and I'm sure there are YouTubers who do this once they get maybe a bit more jaded or experience, and they can just film it, whack it off to an editor and handle it, send it back to me, I'll upload. Yep. But to me, I still really like having my signature on it because it's such a new thing for me. And I think no editor will ever be able to do exactly what you want. So it's a little learning curve for both of you, you know, teaching them, okay, when I say the white people stuff, I want a bubble head, you know, when I do jump cuts. Oh, it's so many little details. Sometimes I'm going to get to too much of the detail now, but when I do a jump cut is just like a cut, essentially, that has no camera angle. So it's just like a YouTube-y cut, right? Mm-hmm. I don't leave any frames of silence. Mm-hmm. And a lot of editors do leave frames of silence because it's more natural, more TV-friendly. But I don't, you know? So
this isn't TV.
Yeah, exactly. So I do that kind of thing. And I do Zooms. I'm very particular about my Zooms. Only Zoom and stop right before I deliver the punchline. You know, I have little tips and tricks to tell people, just whack in their face that this is a punchline. You know, zoom in yep. And stop the music on the punchline. You know, so there's all these little things that I have to still be hands-on, you know. And I do hire people, but I still edit so much. For every minute of video, every minute of a finished video, it's 1.5 hours of behind-the-scenes editing, post-production work, essentially. Creating a thumbnail. You know, how do I... Is there a job title as a YouTube thumbnail creator? Not really. So I have to work with the editor, say, okay, give me a few stills and this is how I want it. And I still have to end up doing the finishing touches on all that stuff. So I'm still very, very, very hands-on. Yeah.
Yes. And all of it's just presumably still like a big learning process. And it's indefinitely a learning process because you're always going to want to go, if I put this exclamation mark in that color, is that going to lead to more likes or more views than if I put it in that place again, in that kind, weird little micro decisions when you're dealing with such a volume of people, then it's those things that count.
Yeah, it's the micro decisions that got it right. But, you know, I don't think of like, will it lead to more likes? It's not as scientific as that. It's more like, does it make it watchable? It's still my instinct. Just, oh, this looks good. This feels good. And then when I watch other YouTubers, I learn certain techniques they use, the YouTube techniques. Okay, oh, they use the sound effect. Okay, let me use that sound effect too. You know, like, fring, that Metal Gear Solid exclamation mark sound effect. That
yes,
goes
yeah,
it. So,
yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I pick that up. Or when someone's thinking, they play the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire sound effect. And then they have mathematical equations coming out their faces.
Yes, so, yeah.
So that's little things I learn. And how it's always striving to make the next video even better. You know, what other new techniques can I do to make it more watchable? So, yeah, I'm still in the learning micro decision phase. And, you know, I don't know, maybe in a year's time I'll be so jaded. I'll be like, fuck it, just edit it, upload it, who cares? You know, but hopefully it'll never get there, you know, fingers crossed.
When it comes to your collaborations, right? So you did, like, you didn't collaborate with Gordon Ramsay. You did a reaction video to Gordon Ramsay, and then he commented on it and got like hundreds of thousands of likes on his comment because he's obviously got a good sense of humor and was able to kind of run with it. Did you know that? Did you send it to him or did you just put it up there and then that was a happy accident?
I just put it up there. I think my fans just tweeted at him constantly. Okay. And Gordon's team put out that fried rice video after I made the Jamie Oliver fried rice video. So I think they knew. They knew I was coming for it. And I got like a barrage of messages from every like fan saying, oh, you have to review Gordon Ramsay. You have to review Gordon Ramsay. So I was like, okay, give them what they want, right? And it was a good video and it was still funny. That was another challenge too. How do I make it funny while thinking the video is good? So that was a new thing for me. How do I not shit on the video and still make it funny?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Talk to me about that. How do you, what's the difference in that process?
Every video, you know, presents a different challenge, you know. The first one is easier to make funny because I just shit on things and just, shit, what the fuck, you know, just exclaim and it's funny in that sense. So Gordon once was, how do I make it funny while thinking he's doing a great job? So the strategy was to make fun of everything else except the cooking. So I made fun of the wrinkles on his face. I said, oh, Gordon, you got all the steps right so far, but I think you need better skincare. Then I zoom in on his wrinkles on his face. But don't worry, just take Jamie Oliver's wet fried rice and put it on your face. It'll moisturize it instantly. So two burns in one sentence, you know, which was, I was pretty proud of that. Or the, Gordon Ramsay has two walk. He's a walk fuck boy. That's another huge line that when I was recording it, I was like, oh, this is pretty funny. But I didn't know it was going to be such a huge line that people quoted over and over again. So sometimes I have happy accidents like that. But yeah, every video presents a slightly different challenge. And then there's a video where I review memes. Okay, how do you make something that's already meant to be funny? How do you add a layer of funny to it? Right. Yes. So that's a different challenge. And then the Halloween outfit reviewing video, I got my... my fans, my nieces and nephews to dress up as Uncle Roger. Yeah. So they dressed up, sent in the photos, videos, and then I was like, okay, how do I make this funny? And that became more of a roast type of situation.
Yes.
You know, but the thing about YouTube is also that's not every line needs to be like a beautiful, pristine joke. You can get away with just saying what it is and just doing some... It's not a full comedy show. People want to see you as well. So I get away with a little bit of that. Nobody can write 12 minutes of solid jokes every week, right? So it's sprinkled throughout.
Yeah, okay. And then you collaborate. You did one on That's What I Reckon. Yeah. And I'd only recently, only this year, seen That's What I Reckon on Facebook and gone, oh my God, absolutely huge on Facebook. Really funny, kind of heavy metal inspired, tattooed chef, you know, calling rice pricks and all the rest of it. Really, really, really funny. And that was, so did you just review it and drop it and then Nat commented? Because Nat's a stand-up, right? Nat's on the circuit.
Oh, does he do stand-up? Oh, I didn't even know.
Yeah, yeah, okay. yeah, I think so, yeah.
Well,
I don't know the extent to which I've not seen the stand-up, but I believe it's kind of, I don't know whether they were a stand-up who went on to be a YouTuber or a YouTuber who started doing stand-up, but I've seen their name on like comedy festival bills.
Oh, cool. Yeah, the Nat one is, again, a lot of Australian fans sent it to me, so I was like, okay, sure, let's review this. And his one was a different challenge because he got it mostly right, just some minor things. So Uncle Roger was mostly agreeing. So how do I mostly agree? There's no chance to be like, fuyo, you know, it wasn't as impressive as Gordon's. It was like middle of the road. That's how most people make egg fried rice. You know, just that's just how most of us make it. Sure. And it was mostly correct. So how do I make it funny too?
And of course with Nat is deliberately setting out to be a comedy performer.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's
exactly.
a real recipe, but it's funny. So you've got that dual problem of you agree with the recipe and presumably respect them as a fellow comedy performer, but there's got to be some bite.
Yeah, exactly. So I, again, use a technique of making fun of his hairstyle, his tattoos, the fact that he doesn't have a walk. So I'm like, okay, shit, I've talked about walk a lot now. Let's find a new angle. So I've written so many walk jokes.
You know? So many MSG jokes. Yeah. Are you going to run out of walk and MSG jokes? And is it like what is your feeling about that? About the sustainability of something which one could casually describe it as a one trick pony. Mm-hmm. It could be left as a one trick kind of character. But you know, is there more richness? Is there more depth to find? Or do you think that you will eventually run out of walk jokes and go, do you know, I've got to move on?
I think that's something I am concerned about that. And that's why I try to limit myself to only do one egg fried rice review a month. So
what a sentence.
Because then I can establish myself as more of a, instead of an egg fried rice YouTuber, people just come to me as like, oh, he's a YouTuber. He just reviews random shit. So hopefully I can get to that point where I can just review anything I want.
Okay, right? Okay. So that's the Dwayne Johnson end of it, is being able to be, you know, once you've morphed through the different identities, that's currently the plan, that Uncle Roger is a review character. So you do funny reviews of anything.
Just a YouTuber, really. I would like to make a reaction videos. I would like to make gaming videos, you know, but well edited and not just like an hour of me gaming sitting in silence. So I would play a game and, you know, talk about it. So yeah, just reacting to anything, and even like being out in the location, shoot, that kind of thing. Just Uncle Roger is this pretty funny YouTuber. That would be what I would love to be known as, you know, and hopefully they'll know Nigel Leung as well. But let's tackle that problem separately.
And let's talk about the nieces and nephews, because one of the things we talked about was about community. Mm-hmm. And about kind of retaining and growing the fan base. So now there's like 5,000 people in a Reddit community of Uncle Roger fans. You know, I guess you have a Discord as well.
Yeah, the Discord's more podcast focused, only because like, man, if everybody just joined the Discord, that it would just be overrun.
So
you can't even keep track of the messages. So we keep it like more podcast focused, and we don't advertise the links, but it's easily Googleable if you search it. I want Uncle Roger fans to go more towards the Reddit, because that's been more the classic route for YouTubers. Most of the big YouTubers I follow have their own subreddit, and that's their way of generating content too. Like PewDiePie is a great example. He has a video, I think, every Friday where he just reviews Reddit posts. So every now and then I can review some Reddit posts. I have an idea coming up.
Free content, right?
Yeah,
free content.
Yeah.
And naturally, the Reddit post is about something that a fan cares about. So that means other fans are going to care about it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then also, Reddit has an internal mechanism of upvotes, right? So you can just pick the one that's most upvoted to, okay, people like this, take this, look at the comments. Is there anything funny in the comments? Okay, steal that. add to it as a comic, you make it funnier than just a comment, of course, but you know, that's free content for you. I still have to package it up nicely and make it funnier, but it's a good way to go, because if you have to come up with a 10-12 minute video every week, that's a lot of content, you know? So try to make it as easy as you can on yourself. I have an idea coming up, which is I want to roast my nieces and nephews. So I just wanted to send post selfies on the Reddit, and then I can just try to roast them. So that's an idea coming up. So that not only helps grow my subreddit, it also gives me more content for a future video too. So, yeah.
And which of these, like, what are the other things like that that you're doing? Like, so let's look at the, there's, in terms of community, you've got the Reddit and the Discord. Have you got a mailing list? Is that part of the funnel? How's it kind of structured such that you get to retain people in the event that Reddit bombs, or, you know, or they decide to stop a particular app or what have you? Because that's one of the, I remember people who had like Olaf Falafel had a huge audience on Vine, and then they went, oh, we're shutting Vine. Mm. Oh, great.
Well, I kind of have everything you mentioned. that's the beauty of it, is like these things being on multiple different platforms, that's easier to hire someone to help you out with, you know.
Okay.
So I'm on TikTok, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Weibo, which is Chinese Twitter, and I'll be on Chinese YouTube soon. I'm on what else is there? Instagram, of course. I'm on Reddit, I'm on Twitter. I have a mailing list, yes. I have a Patreon, I have a Discord. What else is there? I have merch.
Talk to me about merch. What kind of merch have you got?
Oh, just right now is just t-shirts and very generic stuff you can get on Printful, which is a supplier I use, but I'm slowly winding that down because it's becoming not manageable for me, because sometimes I'm doing customer support sometimes, man. where's my packages? So like, fuck. I don't have time for this, but I still reply because, you know, I'm selling it, right? So I still need some sort of service, but I'm winding it down, moving towards letting my management handle it. But I have some exciting new merch drops, so to speak.
Yes, okay.
YouTuber link. Yeah, new merch dropping, merch drop, you know. So I have some, hopefully some exciting new merch coming soon that won't be extra effort on my part. Right now it's just fans submitting their drawings, and I'm like, oh, I really like this. Can I buy it from you and just put it on t-shirts? And they're like, yeah, sure. And they're very happy for me I leave a little text on their Instagram handle on the shirt itself, and they're happy, I'm happy, and people like it. Yeah.
And in terms of the kind of brand partnerships and the YouTube advertising and stuff like that, like was it a VPN?
Express
it made
VPN.
So much sense. You advertised a VPN. Yeah. I was like, you clever bastard. That's exactly right. So talk to me about that. Did you get in touch with them? Did they get in touch with you?
So I've done Express VPN. I've done Audible. And I've done Wondershare Filmora, which is a video editing suite. And yeah, all these came through management, really.
Okay.
Yes, you can pitch yourself to brands, but I don't have time for that, man. I'm struggling enough under the creation. I don't have time to put a pitch deck together of my stats and stuff. So they all come by through management, and they get a cut, and they just tell me what to say, and I say it in a funny way. And that's it.
And I remember I saw a comment on one of your videos, which is like, this is the only channel where I don't skip the adverts. I thought, that's got to go on your pitch deck, right? If you've got one, this is the only channel where I don't skip the adverts.
I hope my management is pitching me like that.
Yeah.
At a certain point, you just have to be like, okay, I can't control everything, and I have to be okay with that.
Yes. Yeah right. Okay. How has your worldview changed? Does it feel a bit like winning the lottery, where suddenly over the course of this year, you're in a radically different position? What are the changes you've noticed in how you are thinking about things?
I think the most rewarding and satisfying change is nobody bugs me to do the fringe anymore, which is, oh,
I knew you'd say that.
That's the best part about being called a YouTuber, you know? That's nobody bugs me to do the fringe anymore. But yes, it does feel like winning the lottery, and I wake up every day feeling so super lucky and super grateful, you know. And I think, yes, I could have, like when you said, yes, it's a lot of preparation, but yeah, I could prepare my whole life and never ever get this break, you know. So I need to see, okay, this is a break, and I'm very, very lucky to have this. And so my worldview, how has it changed? It's made me a bit busier, but I like being busy, and I think, I don't know, how has it changed? I'm just more grateful. I'm just really, really grateful to be in this position. And I know that in this pandemic, a lot of our peers are, you know, a lot of the live performers are struggling. And I feel super lucky to at least have work to do and be able to pay rent and put food on the table. So every day I just feel, you know, extremely lucky, you know. There's no other way to describe it, I think.
Do you know Zoella now? That was a fan question.
No, I don't. We are very different niches, I think. But hey, Zoella, if you want to collab, hit me up. I'll teach you how to make egg fried rice.
Well, I mean, I think that opens a wider question about the interaction with the YouTuber community. Because obviously when we're on the circuit, we see each other in green rooms. Is there an equivalent to that? Is there an equivalent whereby I noticed in the video where you were around Hersh's house, someone who is a big YouTuber, you kind of cut in a little micro video from then, not someone I'd heard of. But like, what are those? Do people get in touch with you and say, hey, do you want to collaborate in the same way that you might get in touch with Aussie Man Reviews and say, you know, what? Just talk to me about that structure, that whether there's a hierarchy. Are you edgy about who makes the first move? Because is it like movie stars that everyone wants to be the most famous one that the other one comes to? What's that like?
Yeah, sometimes they reach out to me. Sometimes I reach out to them. I think Aussie Man one, he reached out to me. And I think the best practice for reaching out to anyone, if you want to do a collab with them, is to come with a few ideas. So don't just come and say, hey, I would love to collab with you. That they don't suggest anything. And then it's like, okay, sure. But I don't have time to think about how I will make a video with you, you know? So yeah. Aussie Man came and he was like, hey, I have this video. Let's both react to it. And he came with a script and everything. I still had to tweak it because it wasn't in my voice. I still wrote some jokes for it. But he came with an idea. And I was like, yeah, let's do it, man. Let's do it. And it was really, really fun. I did a collab with Two Set Violin. They're a comedy violin YouTuber. They're two violinists who make comedies about the violin and music. So they reached out to me saying, hey, let's both review this prodigy playing the violin. I was like, yeah, that's great. Let's do it. And that was super, super fun. I reached out to, there's some YouTubers I reached out. I reached out to Davey504. He's a comedy-based YouTuber. And I reached out saying that, hey, let's both review like a bass prodigy, or you can teach me how to play bass. So I pitched a few ideas. So I haven't heard back yet, but you know, he's also a lot bigger than I am. And that's okay. I think that's usually how it works, really. Most YouTube people in my niche aren't in London. I think just Instagram DM. You just email them and then you see what you can work on.
And do you end up on WhatsApp groups of people with more than 2 million subscribers?
WhatsApp groups? No, I'm not in any big YouTuber WhatsApp group.
Do you know what I mean?
I think they're all too busy.
I don't know. Maybe there is. I just wonder about to which there is a feeling of community. Or whether it is sort of individual, it's almost like being like a musician. You go, I'm going to do a thing featuring Kylie. And you're like, great, that was that. And then you move on, you never hang out.
I think there is, but I think it's geographically tied. So I've seen creator get-togethers in like Vancouver, and then all the Asian Canadian YouTubers show up and they play basketball and eat food, you know, that kind of thing. So I would love to be part of one in London, but you know, then the pandemic complicates things too. So because this YouTube thing is still quite, I'm still quite new to it, so I don't know too much about the community side of things yet.
Yes. Okay. Do your fan? This is another fan question. Do your family still criticize your choice of income stream?
Oh yeah. No, they actually get YouTube. They get what YouTube is more than they get what stand up is, because they're from Malaysia and you know YouTube is bigger there than stand up comedy as a genre. So they get it now, and my parents are starting to take. They're telling all their relatives about how proud they are, you know, they decided to come around, you know, and it's very nice too, because I remember when my mom and dad, they came to see my stand-up, they don't understand all of it, so they don't really get it, because I speak quite fast, and they have an accent, they didn't grow up speaking English, it's their second language, you know, I'm speaking this very neutral accent, you know, so they don't really get it, they just laugh and they see other people laughing. But Uncle Roger, they get because it sounds like them. Yeah. And I say the vernacular is like them. The accent is very Asian and they get it. And the subject material is very easy. I'm literally showing on screen this person making rice. Whereas on stand-up, I don't have any multimedia element, right? So they actually get my YouTube, and it's nice seeing them laughing at my work for the first time ever, you know.
That's lovely. That's really lovely. I mean, it does make me think about like when I mean, it's such a unique time at the moment with the pandemic, whether when stand-up comes back, you do the tour, Uncle Roger opens for Nigel, is Nigel going to go like, it's just me and a microphone, I need stuff, I need other, you know, I mean, now that you have the full gamut, are you going to feel like you've had your wings clipped to be just back to telling a story?
I don't know. I don't think so. Every time I do stand up, I still enjoy it so much, man. You know, YouTube is fun, But stand up is like, oh, it hits a different part of your being than YouTube does. So I still love doing it so much. And I never felt I was clipped, you know. I feel like every platform, every genre has a different limitations, and working around it is part of the fun, right? So I don't think so.
And finally then, is there anything that anyone listening to this can do to try to follow in your footsteps success-wise? Or is it simply that, like, I remember, I mean, talking to this fellow parent this morning. Do you know Derren Brown?
Who?
So, do you know Derren Brown? He's a magician.
Oh, the magician. UK. Oh, shit. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I wasn't talking to him. I was talking about him. Okay, so, okay. He did a thing. He did a thing which I think really sums up the elegance of his thinking, where he, and I'm going to spoil a 10-year-old or 15-year-old Derren Brown trick now. He spoils it himself. He does a thing where he gets a person to make a video of themselves. He sends them an anonymous tip saying, take £10 of your own money and put it on this horse in this race and make a video diary showing me how you got on. And so what the TV show is, this person doing a series, they do 6 video diaries. I can't believe it. I did it. The horse won. So he sent me another message. This person, he doesn't know it's Derren Brown. This guy sent me another message. I took the winnings. I put it on another horse that he specified, and that horse won. And now I've got all this money. And he keeps doing it 6 times in a row. And on the 6th time, Derren Brown says, put all of the winnings, because each time he's reinvesting the winnings, put all of the winnings on this horse. And then this time I will meet you at the horse races, and I'll explain how I'm giving you all of these tips. And separate, you know, not necessarily for broadcast, but have you got any idea how he's doing it? This guy wins every single time because he knows the horse. There's only one way he could possibly be doing it, and it's pertinent to what we're talking about.
No. Can he see the future or something? No, I don't know.
He sent out 150,000 emails.
Oh,
saying,
okay.
Saying, invest £10 of your own money. So we're seeing the one success. So the trick hinges on looking at it from completely the other angle. And the way, I mean, I love that because I think it's just such a paradigm shift in how you think about things. And I wonder if there are parallels with this, because is it possible to follow in the footsteps of someone who has had your viral success? Or is it simply that we're looking at it from the other end of the one person, not the one person, but, you know, in this example, the one person who in times of pandemic doubled down on the videos, created the ground to get lucky, and got lucky.
And very depressingly, that's good news and bad news, I think. Yeah.
I didn't mean it to be depressing.
I definitely think there's a little bit of that. And that's why I always count my lucky stars. And honestly, if you told me, if you restarted 2020 and you told me to recreate what I did this year, I don't even know if I could. I could remember, okay, I said this, I edited the video like this. If I put it up, if I put it up on a different day, nothing would have happened. You know, the point is, I don't feel confident that I can recreate this in an alternate universe. And that's the definition of luck, right? But that being said, I think learning all those skills and just continuously grafting, I think you can still grow just at a slower pace. Which I was growing even before this. You know, I think before
we talked.
I was, you know, 8,000 on YouTube, 60,000 on Instagram. I was selling a good number of tickets for someone at my level, you know, at Soho Theater, all that stuff. So just because you don't get that big viral hit doesn't mean you can't have a career. So I think that's something to take away from it, I guess, to make it less depressing.
Yeah, I didn't mean for it to be depressing, because I think from my perspective, you know, you have been so rigorous in that. I think, as I said at the beginning of this, I think in order to follow in your footsteps, someone would need to be as focused and as comprehensively across all of the research, all of the metrics, all of the tests. You were, when we spoke earlier this year, you were testing whether this hashtag would make a difference or this edit would make a difference. You know, and I think that there is luck, but it also kind of feels inevitable. And I think that is borne out by the fact that, you know, even now you're not relaxing into it. You're trying new things, continuing to test, continuing to experiment. And I think only with that, you know, you've got what you deserve.
Oh, thanks. That's very nice of you to say. I also think it's not for everybody, because I'm very much a generalist, and some people, they just want to do stand up and they're very pure and they just want to focus on that, and that's okay too. You know, it's just I'm fortunate that there is a medium out there, i.e. YouTube and social media, that works very well for my personality type. You know, I like knowing what lens to use, how to edit, and learning all these things. But I'm also very aware that there are some people who, you know, just want to focus on writing a sitcom and writing a treatment, a pilot, and doing stand-up. And that's okay, too. Everybody has different paths.
So that was Nigel. I'm smiling out loud. My cheeks hurt from listening back to it and even just recording these blurbs. I'm so thrilled for him. What a hero. So if you would like to learn how Nigel really did it, you can download the course on how to do it. It's only £1,000. Go to comedianscomedian.com/, obviously I'm making this up. But, you know, it's one of those ones where... don't actually go there. Obviously I'm making this up. But it is one of those things where, like, what he's got hold of is the thing that everybody wants these days. 2.8 million. I wrote the blurbs to this a few weeks ago when I was sort of prepping some stuff, maybe even only a week or two, maybe a week, 10 days ago. And in the time I had to change the blurbs from 2.6 million to 2.8 million YouTube subscribers. I'm sure by the time you are listening to this, it'll have gone up again. What an extraordinary situation. And it's such a joy to hear him be so excited about it, but to be so level-headed about it and to sort of be taking it, I guess, in his stride, dealing with it in a very sort of professional, I won't say detached, but professional kind of a way. It's just so exciting to be in some tiny bit of the slipstream of when this happens to someone. So more power to him. Find out all about his stuff at Mr. Nigel Ng. That's MRNIGELNG. But obviously you're not going to do it just by listening to this. You're going to click on it in the show notes or go to youtube.com/Mr. Nigel Ng and see how many bloody million subscribers he's got now. That's it for now. Listen, I'm not even going to post-amble because I'm kind of racing through getting stuff done because it's a phenomenally busy week just before Christmas. And I'm also going to prep next week's episode with Auntie Donna, which has been recorded, is in the can, is delightful, and is going to go out in an automatic way next week when I'm on bloody holiday. And I think I might have a pause for January. I'll maybe start doing some more episode recordings at the end of January. But it might be the beginning of February before you hear the next episode after next week's Auntie Donna one, which isn't a Christmas special. Although there's a little mini plan being hatched with a fellow podcaster, is a fun thing. But I'll tell you more about that as and when it exists. Sensible way to do it. I'm also, last minute, I'm stepping in tonight to replace some poor bastard who couldn't, to be on Pappy's Flat Slam with guest John Richardson and also me. So I'm going to record that. I'm just popping down the shops now to buy some Advocaat. The editor was Nathan Wood. The podcast consultant, as ever, Peter Dobbing. The music was by Rob Smouten, and Jake Crossland did the logging. Happy Christmas to all of them and to you. And I'll see you next week for Zach, Mark and Broden, a.k.a. 50% of Auntie Donna. Speak to you next week.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.